Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now to the United States, where President-elect Donald Trump has doubled down on his election promises, insisting on day one in office he will slap tariffs on imported goods from China, Mexico and Canada. Well, we're joined from Washington now by Simon Marks, chief correspondent with Feature Story News. Good morning, Simon. Thank you for being with us.
You bet, Claire. Good to be with you.
So Donald Trump has made these statements on his social media platform, Truth Social. What's he been saying?
He says, and this isn't entirely unexpected, because as you know, tariffs and protectionism lie at the very heart of his proposed economic policies. He says that on day one, he is going to impose fresh tariffs on the three countries that provide the United States with most imports, more imports than any other. That's China, Mexico and Canada. He's going to impose an additional 25% tariff on all goods coming from Mexico and Canada, he says, as soon as he takes the oath of office on January the 20th of next year. And then he's going to add 10% in tariffs to any existing tariffs that are in place on Chinese goods. He says he wants that wants all of these nations to crack down on illegal immigrants transiting their countries and heading into the United States, and also that he wants to crack down on imports, illegal imports, of course, of fentanyl into the United States, smuggled in, the drug that is responsible for an opioid epidemic across the United States. But all of this sets the stage for a very early test of the central pillar of Donald Trump's economic policy, protectionism, and whether tariffs are going to lead to increased prices and inflation in the United States, as many economists contend, or whether some of the goods that America imports from these countries and others can simply be produced within the United States instead.
Mm-hmm. And there will be some a lag time between, you know, whether production can be ramped up in the United States is a big question mark. What is clear, though, is that there will be a gap. You know, if you have these tariffs imposed, people will be paying more for these products, certainly initially. And there was some uncertainty as to whether he would go ahead with this policy. What's the response been?
Well, warnings, of course, about the impact on consumers. I mean, when you look at just the numbers, 85% of avocados in the United States come from Mexico. About 30% of the tomatoes that Americans eat come from Mexico. You see the same percentages for things like mangoes, corn, beans, beef, all sorts of other items that come in either from Mexico, Canada, or from China. And the only thing that is going to lead to those increased tariffs are either shortages in the stores or increased prices in the stores. And given that Donald Trump's election win was largely won on the back of concern about prices in supermarkets that were being expressed by many Americans, it is certainly going to be curious to see how the Trump administration and its brand new cabinet plans to manage what looks like being a fair old storm. There will also be impacts, of course, on supply chains as well. That lag that you mentioned could mean that all sorts of non-food stuffs become more expensive and harder to source in the United States. So this is going to be a very early test of Donald Trump's contention that he can raise tariffs and not see an inflationary impact on the economy.
Yeah, it's quite a surprise, really, to see him go in this hard, this early on the tariff issue, because so many people, including people who worked with him before and who say they know him well, so don't worry about this. He's a negotiator. This is a tactic. You just need to put something else on the table and he'll roll back from this tariff threat. Well, it seems they were wrong.
Well, it may be that this is a tactic, of course, because it's only November the 26th and he doesn't get inaugurated for just under two more months. He's already had a telephone conversation with Justin Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister. That took place immediately after Donald Trump issued this depth charge across his social media platform, Truth Social. And I'm sure that the Trump inner circle presumes that this threat to take this action is going to lead to all sorts of concentrated markets. mines in Ottawa, in Mexico City and in Beijing, and conversations that take place in a bid by Canada and Mexico, certainly, to head off the impacts of some of this on their producers. So this could all be part of an early pre-presidential series of negotiations that he wants to have, so that when he does enter office on January the 20th, on his first day in office, he's actually got something tangible to point to and say, you see, I threatened these guys and they backed down.
Mm-hmm. What does he want, though, in return? Do we know?
Yeah, well, certainly from Canada and Mexico, he wants a major crackdown on the border, both borders, the northern and southern border into the United States. He wants to stop the flood of what he says is a tsunami of illegal migrants crossing into the United States. And indeed, he wants Mexico to prepare for potentially millions of migrants to be deported from the United States and sent back to the South. From China, he's definitely pushing for more of a commitment from President Xi Jinping to crack down on the illicit supply of fentanyl into the United States. China is ground zero for fentanyl supplies into the United States, and he's clearly looking for more of a commitment by President Xi than he has already offered to President Joe Biden to engage in a crackdown.
Mm-hmm. We had an interesting discussion on the programme last week about fentanyl, and we heard that the raw materials are coming in legally either to Mexico or the United States, and then they're being mixed there.
Exactly.
So he might have a bigger problem on his hands that mightn't be addressed by tariffs solely. So the other big story that people have been talking about is the decision to drop these, or to make moves to drop these criminal charges against Donald Trump. This was the charges in relation to allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election result. This is the long-standing policy that presidents cannot be prosecuted. Special Counsel Jack Smith now agreeing that that's the course of action that should be taken. A really big win for Trump in the weeks before he goes back into the White House.
A massive win, Claire. I mean, his election victory is not just a political win for Donald Trump. It's also a legal win, because as we've seen with Jack Smith, the special prosecutor who was heading up the federal criminal case against Donald Trump regarding alleged efforts to subvert the outcome of the 2020 election. He was also heading up the case in Florida that had been dropped into Trump's alleged mishandling of classified documents. Those cases now withering on the vine because the Justice Department, under Attorney General Merrick Garland, is taking the view that the precedent that the federal government cannot prosecute any president while in office means that those cases simply cannot advance. Remember that also it looks like there is every possibility that in the Stormy Daniels hush money case in New York, which has been brought by authorities in New York, it's not a federal criminal case. That's the case in which there were 34 felony convictions of Donald Trump, the case in which he made history, becoming the first sitting or former president ever convicted of crimes. It may well be that those convictions get set aside as well. There's a big criminal, procedural tussle underway now between prosecutors and the president's lawyers. The judge has postponed indefinitely Donald Trump's sentencing in that case. So already, even before he is president again, he is enjoying the powers of the presidency, particularly with regard to the Department of Justice dropping those cases. And for Jack Smith, who is going to leave the Department of Justice before Trump's inauguration, those documents and the filing of them in federal court have to have stuck in the craw, because he was absolutely certain that he had amassed evidence that Donald Trump engaged in a criminal conspiracy to undo the outcome of Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 election. And now all of the work and all of the money that has been spent on the work was for naught. Mm-hmm. It is going to go away, and with one bound, Donald Trump will be free.
And Jack Smith will be out along with so many others. I'm just thinking about a conversation we had with one of our own people, a professor here from Ireland, who was at COP29 last week, and he was saying he was chatting to some of the Americans and they were preparing to go home and be fired, essentially.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, especially in the area of environmental policy. I mean, that's for certain. But we see it all over Washington. I mean, there is a determination on the part of Donald Trump, as you and I have discussed before, not to be derailed this time round by what the Make America Great Again supporters insist is the deep state. He is not going to appoint anyone to his cabinet. We've already seen that, who is an expert or a fixture in Washington, D.C. He wants only proven loyalists of his movement, and he wants those only in civil service positions as well. And so, you know, hushed conversations continue to take place across Washington about whether civil servants are or are not safe in their positions. And the answer is that by the thousands, civil servants probably are not. There is every possibility that he's going to fire many of them and try to find as many loyalists as he can to fill their positions. Remember also that Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, heading this new Department of Government Efficiency, mm-hmm. have announced that they want the federal government to return to work in the office 5 days a week. The federal government is still not back in the office post-COVID. And that's another issue that is weighing on many civil servants, because they can see, even if they survive with their jobs, their home life balance changing dramatically after January the 20th.
Yeah, very interesting to see how that all plays out. Now, I want to talk to you about another commitment that Donald Trump has made, this issue of tackling legal and illegal immigration, ramping up deportations, and it has been causing widespread fear and panic. I'll speak to an attorney working in this area in just a moment. But do we have any indication that he's going to move as quickly on this as he did on tariffs?
He's going to move on day one in some regard with regard to deportations. He's appointed this new border czar, Tom Homan, who is very much a zealot within the Make America Great Again firmament. He's the former head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement during Trump's first term in office. He's the man that is being given the authority to begin the process of mass deportations of up to 20 million migrants living illegally in the United States. There is talk of a period in which economic benefits will be cut to those people, and they will then be encouraged to self-deport to reach the conclusion that the streets of the United States are not paved with sufficient gold to make it comfortable staying there. But lawyers across the United States, attorneys, are reporting fevered efforts by illegal immigrants to try and protect themselves, in some cases by marrying one another so that they might qualify for green cards, in other cases to get their status under Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which impacts the 530,000 children of illegal migrants, many of them now, of course, grown in the United States, to extend their status under DACA, get the paperwork done before Trump arrives in office. There is a panic out there, and there are plans in some Democrat-run jurisdictions to expand on the offer of sanctuary that already exists. There are many cities in the country that describe themselves as sanctuary cities. You could see refuge being offered, and that border czar, Tom Homan, says if that happens, he's simply going to show up with a bigger show of force to try and drag people off the streets and send them north or south across the country's border.
It is extraordinary. Simon, thank you so much. Simon Marks, Chief Correspondent of Feature Story News. Let's get more on that sense of panic out there at what Trump might do when it comes to immigration. Fiona McEntee is Managing Attorney at McEntee Law Group and former Media Chair of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Fiona, thank you for being with us today.
Good morning from Chicago, Claire.
So we heard Simon describing there what's been happening. Does that mirror what you're hearing in the calls that you're getting?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think we obviously felt the sense of fear and panic before the election. But since the election, I mean, we have been receiving, I would say, record number of phone calls and emails from all different types of immigrants here in the US and their family members who are all extremely concerned about what might happen.
And is it the case that even people who are there and working legally who have green cards are fearful?
That is absolutely the case. And I would actually take that one step further and say even naturalized US citizens who, you know, have fully completed the immigration process are also fearful, because there has been a lot of talk from, you know, candidate Trump initially, and some of his, you know, like Stephen Miller, they were talking about a denaturalization force. And that was also, you know, a feature of the prior administration. So you have naturalized US citizens who really have no reason to be concerned on paper, but they're hearing all this and they're starting to panic. You know, could I be at risk here?
Mm-hmm. And there are organizations, I know, holding meetings which are being attended in huge numbers by people who are terrified.
Yeah, there are. I mean, I think I heard you mention our group, which is the American Immigration Lawyers Association. So it's a national bar association of over 16,000 immigration lawyers throughout the US. So we have our regular meetings, but then we also offer kind of ad hoc Know Your Rights and different types of like pro bono clinics, along with a lot of other nonprofits throughout the US that are organizing, because I think it's really critical that people are aware of their rights in various situations. You know, when do they have to open the door? What happens during a workplace raid? And I think that information is important for immigrants, but also for US citizens who want to be an ally and friend to their immigrant neighbors and coworkers.
So what are you telling people about that? What happens during a workplace raid? What happens when there's a knock on your own front door?
Yeah, well, there's different. The ACLU, actually, the American Council for Civil Liberties, has some great handouts about specific Know Your Rights info, you know, just things like you have the right to remain silent, only open the door if there is a warrant from a judge, you know, not to sign anything without talking to a lawyer. And something that really kind of touches home for me as a mom of two kids is this, you know, idea that you should make a family plan for, you know, your children in advance of something happening. That is just heartbreaking to know that there are hardworking, you know, immigrant parents all throughout the US that are sitting down in kitchen tables making a plan for who will care for their children if they end up getting deported. And I think, you know, we can obviously throw out a lot of statistics and, you know, think about how many people are impacted. We need to remember that these are human beings. These are people that are contributing to the US, and the US economy would fall apart if you know, this many people were deported from it as well. It doesn't make any sense from an economical point of view either.
So you're saying to people, you don't need to panic, but you do need to be ready.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not in the business of fear mongering, but we're also, you know, we have to recognize that this is a fear that is well founded based on all the rhetoric of the campaign, but also what happened last time. I mean, I practiced during the prior Trump administration, and I was out at the airport on day one of the Muslim ban, which was a few days into, you know, Trump's inauguration last time. So people's fear is based on all these sentiments and on prior policies and on threats. But I think getting informed, making a plan, getting access to, you know, legal assistance, these are kind of proactive things that people can do so that they try to prepare themselves as best they can. But I mean, it's just a really scary position for a lot of people.
And I'm sure in your work, you've heard from Irish people who are worried.
Yeah, we absolutely have. I mean, we've heard, I mean, it's hard to express, you know, the level of fear and who this touches. I mean, it's everything from international students to people on J1 visas. I mean, there's been statements by many by universities with international students advising all the international students and international faculty researchers to be in the country on inauguration day. So they're saying to them, if you're out of the US for, you know, over the holiday period, you know, you might want to consider coming back to the US so that you're not in transit, mm-hmm. you know, but you know, like before the inauguration. And I think they're doing that based on what happened last time with the Muslim ban.
Fiona, I expect we'll be talking again as the date of Donald Trump's inauguration approaches. Thank you very much for being with us. Fiona McEntee, Managing Attorney at McEntee Law Group. Coming up next, Chef Brian McDermott.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.